This meeting is being recorded.
This meeting is being recorded, and it is the 12th of May, and oh my goodness, it's our last week of instruction. I am so proud of all of you, and you don't need to see me, so I'm going to mute my video. I am so proud of all of you for sticking with us this long. What a semester. This one, it's hard to believe, and it may be my very last semester. I'm not sure, but I'll tell you what I know. That we have, it looks as though we have a replacement for my full-time position, which I left last spring. So we'll have a new full-time business professor in the fall. It still has to be approved by the governing board, and the governing board might say, you know what, we can't afford it because all the funding is going to be destroyed next year because of the downturn in the economy from the virus. But hopefully, we'll see. I'll be able to teach this class online, maybe get one section next spring. So this could be my last time teaching this class. And it's so sad. It's so sad. It's so sad because I just love teaching this class. It's my favorite thing to do, and I'm so proud of all of you. Okay, so today we have much to do. We have alternative investments, miscellaneous topics. We're going to discuss account types. And we discussed brokerage firms last week, and we'll take a look at the different account types because there's some confusion about that. And then we'll discuss the alternative investments, such as real estate and gold. And whatever we don't get done today, no problem. We have plenty of time to finish up on Thursday. On Thursday, we will also go through the pre-final worksheet, the pre-final calculations worksheet, and review for the final, which will start at the end of this week, and you have the whole all of next week, this weekend, and all of next week to work on the final. Okay, so joke. Anybody got a good joke? I told you a Microsoft joke last week, right? I'm going to tell you another one. Okay, here's another one. This is a true story, of course. They're always true stories. This woman had been married three times before, and they didn't work out. She meets a guy and falls in love, and she wants to get married. He wants to marry her. So on their wedding night, she says to him, she says, you know, I'm still a virgin. And he says, look, you don't have to play this game with me. I know you were married three times before. She said, no, it's true. You have to believe me. And he says, all right. What happened to the first husband? She said, well, my first husband had a medical problem, and I wanted children, and that's why I divorced him. He said, okay, what happened to the second husband? Well, she said, the second husband was homosexual. He wasn't even interested in me, and I wanted children, so that's why I divorced him. And he said, okay, what happened to the third husband? And she said, oh, the third husband was Bill Gates. Yeah, so, well, every night on the bed, he would just tell me how good it was going to be. Oh. The guy says, "That guess that makes sense. What would you expect from a guy who names his company Microsoft?" See, that's a Microsoft joke. Anyway, let's... and we have an end-of-semester joke on Thursday, which is actually very useful if we ever do go back to face-to-face classes. Okay, so let's now share the screen and take a look at... Is this the right one? This one right here, right? That's it. Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. No, maybe it's that one. No, it's this one. I don't know. So let's take a look at how we're doing. To believe it or not, dear students, after all the volatility, look at our performance. We are only down 5%. Hard to believe. And look, Beyond Meat has come back strong. Whose idea was, I keep telling myself to look at this Brookfield Renewable Partners, but of course I can't get to the library to look at the value line. Look at Tesla's rebounded. To Mr. Elon Musk is in the news quite a bit these days. I think he's losing it. Having a child, it will drive you nuts. No sleep. But look at the banks. We were talking about the banks. Too big to fail, but they're, yeah, in a recession, banks don't do very well. Berkshire Hathaway, they'll come back. And then Coca-Cola, fizzy sugar water with a brown crayon stuck in it. But you guys should be really proud of yourself considering how bad this last semester has been for stocks, we have clawed our way back. Do I think it's over? Do I think it's blue skies, clear sailing? No, no, no. I keep telling anybody who wants to listen that we're due for another downturn. I don't know how bad it's going to be, but I'm pretty sure, because we ain't seen the end of this virus yet. People are thinking, oh, we're going to open up the economy, everything's going to be great. Wrong. Well, I hope they're right. You know, I'm not rooting for, I am not rooting for something bad to happen, but it looks as though they're just not listening to reality. They're just not they don't want to believe the experts, and the experts will be the first people to tell you that they're not sure what's going to happen. They don't know what's going to happen, but it's scary time, very scary time, and I don't want to die. I'm not worried about my investments. I'm worried about dying. Now, I don't know if you saw this. You should have gotten an email, but we made it in the news. KUSI had one of their segments on Southwestern College students can apply for federal CARES Act funding, making the school the first community college in the region to disperse the funds to its students. So you probably got something in your email from Southwestern Community College. But definitely, definitely check this out. You can apply at once for the funding. So check it out. Okay, so that's enough of that. All right, now let's take a look at the website. Notice the next exam is the final exam. It will be on all chapters, but there will be specific questions on the material that we in the last 2 weeks. However, all the questions on the exam from the chapters after exam number 4 are right here, dear students. So you can study those questions about options, futures, buying on margin, shorting, and different types of investments that we'll discuss today. So it's there for you. The pre-final worksheet, as we said, we will go over on Thursday. We will have a recorded Zoom session. Thursday night, we'll do it again. For those of you who want to be stick around Thursday night for the online office hour. So there's plenty of options. And here, I made a mistake in the assignment. I don't know if I mean, the announcement. I said week number 5. So I meant to say week 15. You knew that, right? And then here it is. It's again pre-final evaluation, pre-final valuation problems, calculations, the answer keys, the questions on the final exam. And then here's an opportunity for you to evaluate me. If you're going through the Canvas modules, the very last module, and let's go there, the very last module, and those of you who aren't in the class, Tiffany and Petra, uh-oh, what happened? I hope my computer, something went wrong. Okay, forget it. The browser screwed up, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to close that. Okay, but there it is, right there. The ability for you to evaluate me is there on the in Canvas, and you don't have to use Canvas. You could send it to me via email or whatever. Okay, so now let's run all down to the last section of the class website, and that is miscellaneous topics in investing. So we'll go through these. I'm not sure what order, but we'll start with retirement accounts, regular accounts, and annuities. Okay, and then we got real estate investment trusts, precious metals, art, collectibles, cryptocurrencies, and then the ultimate investment, which is starting a business. And we might not get to that until Thursday. But let us, I must be forgetting. Okay, we're over the exam. We'll do the pre-final. Okay, so I'm ready. We're ready. So the first thing is we get to go. So now, oh, by the way, well, we definitely won't have time today. But normally at the end of the semester, we ask you to ask us any questions at all about investing. So if you have any, send me any questions at all via email and just whatever's on your mind. I'll maybe even look at one of them today, one of the questions, because it has a lot to do with real estate. But if we have time on Thursday, we'll go through. I call it Baffle the Broker. So any question you want. I used to teach programming, called it Stump the Nerd, about computers, but now I teach finance, investments. Ask me any question about finance, investments. Okay, so let's go now, stop the share, and let's go to, who do we got here? Okay, looks like we've got everybody. Mr. Garcia, welcome. Thank you for coming. Okay, so now we went to account types. Share the screen with account types, miscellaneous topics, share, F5. And you should see miscellaneous topics, retirement accounts, regular accounts, and annuities. If you don't, scream and holler. Why? Because you got to put your money somewhere, right? You have to choose an account type. Now, some of you have already opened up accounts at banks and the like, and they didn't bother asking you. They just gave you a regular account. But there are different types of accounts. And the IRS puts them in two different categories: taxable accounts and what the IRS calls tax qualified accounts. We're just going to stick with retirement accounts, but there are educational savings accounts, health savings accounts, different types of trusts and the like. We're not going to discuss those. That's a whole course unto itself in law school. But we're just going to take a look at the difference between a regular taxable account and a retirement account. And we discussed this in detail in Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. So hopefully you've gone through this, because it's important to understand, because there's some a bit of confusion about the difference between these guys. The taxable account, you're gonna have a 1099 every year. Whatever, if you make any interest or dividends or capital gains, or if it's real estate, rent, any cash flows, you're going to have to pay taxes on them. Now, at first, when we're just starting out, the taxes are nothing. They're going to be, pennies. But then when the taxes become a lot, congratulations, because you've done well, right? Very well. I love to pay taxes. Why? Because it means I've made a lot of money, right? There's no limit on the contributions. If you have $1 million, put it in your taxable account, 10 million or whatever. And there's no limit on investment types. So see, this is supposed to look like a bucket. It's supposed to look like a bin where you put the investments in. I don't know if it does or not. I'm not very artistic. That's my brother. But look, anything. You want to do stocks, bonds, cash, mutual funds, great. You want to do buying on margin, shorting, options, futures, even real estate, put it in the taxable account. Now, the tax-qualified accounts, in this case the retirement accounts, have strict limitations on the contributions. You have $1 million, don't put it into your Roth IRA. The company will say, excuse me, we can't accept this. And the IRS will eventually come around and say, you can't do that. There's strict limits on the investment type. Stocks are risky enough. We don't want you doing options and futures and shorting in your retirement account. And because these are tax qualified, the IRS says, well, it's actually the Congress who made the rules. The IRS executes the rules. The Congress is saying, look, you're putting this money away for your retirement. We're going to give you tax deferral. You don't have to pay taxes now. Or, in the case of the Roth, tax-free. So although there are many subtle and not so subtle differences, the major differences is how they are taxed by the IRS, how much money you can contribute, and what you can have in the account. Then the retirement accounts are broken up into two different types. There's the pre-tax, sometimes called before tax, and these are the older ones, the traditional IRA, the SEP IRA, the simple IRA, the KEO, the 401k, 403b, 457, 401a. They all work basically the same way. You put money away now, you get to defer the contributions, you don't have to pay taxes on the contributions, and you don't pay taxes until you retire. The newer one, which was started back in 1998, is the Roth, post-tax contributions, after tax. You don't get a tax break now, but you get a tax break later in retirement. Very cool. So the most popular personal retirement plan is called the traditional IRA. And everybody calls it the individual retirement account. But reality, dear students, the name is individual retirement arrangement. Nobody's going to call it that except for folks at the IRS, because that's the real name. It's now referred to as the traditional IRA to differentiate it from the Roth. And anybody, if you've made money, it doesn't matter how much money you've made, you made $1 million, you can still put the maximum into a traditional IRA, which this year is $6,000. Normally, your contributions are tax deductible, but there's some confusion here. If you have a 401k or 403b at work and you make over a certain amount of money, then you can still contribute to the traditional IRA. It's just that your contributions may not be tax deductible. They would go in as after-tax contributions, which means you have to keep track of that because when you take it out, you don't want to be taxed twice. The contributions limits increase over time with inflation, and the investment grows tax deferred. You normally, after 59 and a half years of age, you can take the money out and pay taxes on it. Once you hit 70 and a half, actually there's a way to do it before you're 59 and a half, but you don't normally want to do that. You want to wait until you're 59 and a half. Mandatory withdrawals begin at 70 and a half. So once you hit 70 and a half, then you have to start taking it out. Otherwise, there's pretty nasty penalties. And then the IRA has many different cousins, the 401k, the 403b, the 457, the 401a, the simple IRA, the SEP IRA, the solo 401k, the SARSEP, the KEO. Why do they have all these different, that's the Congress. They just keep coming up with new versions of the same old thing. It's a retirement account. Now, the Roth IRA is the one that's different. You might hear people talk about Roth 401k, Roth 403b. We put those in parentheses because the IRS doesn't call them that. They just call it a 401k with post-tax contributions. But all these work the same way. Pre-tax, get a tax break now, pay your taxes later. These guys, you don't pay taxes now. I mean, you don't get a tax break now, you pay the taxes now, you don't pay taxes later. So here's how it works. You have a job at a company and they have a 401k or 403b, or maybe you put the money in through your checking account with a traditional IRA. Let's say you have a job at a place with a 401k. They allow you to pull $100 out of your paycheck and send it directly to the 401k. Cool. They may even match. They may give you an extra $50 or $100. What a deal. Who's going to give you 50% return on your money in one day or 100% return on your money in one day? Only your employer. You see your take-home pay lowered. Oh, I'm sorry. Oops, that's a mistake here. I got to press the control button first. Don't you just love Microsoft? I don't. You see 25 fewer dollars taken out of your paycheck. If you're in the 25% tax bracket, and everybody's in a different tax bracket, so you have to find out what your marginal tax rate is. And then say $8 from your California, because they don't match. It might be 6, it might be 8. So you get a subsidy from the federal government and the state government of $33. You see $100 go into your 401k and maybe even more if your company matches, but your take-home pay is only reduced by $67. Now that's a pretty darn good deal. You get $100 worth of investment for $67, maybe $150, maybe $200. What's the catch? There's always a catch, right? Well, okay, it's not that bad. You pay income tax on any amounts you withdraw in retirement. But people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket. And if you're not, if you're in your retirement and you're in a higher tax bracket, congratulations. Because that means you're taking out gobs of money out of your retirement account. And I wish all of you having that horrible problem in your golden years, having too much money in your retirement account. It's called a champagne problem. Champagne, we have too much champagne. What shall we do? Throw another party. Also, if you withdraw the funds before retirement, what are they going to do? You're going to have to pay the income tax. Well, that makes sense. You didn't pay it on the way in. But you also have to pay a 10% penalty. So they slap your wrist. In other words, they don't want you touching this money. They want you to leave it for retirement. Now, there are some exceptions. First-time home purchase, up to 10 grand. Higher education for you or your kids, medical disability, financial hardship, which is hard to get accepted by the IRS, but during these times probably will be accepted. So you're going to kiss this money, throw it on its way, and then come back to it in 30, 40 years, you young folks. Okay, cool? Yes. Now, what about a Roth IRA? Let's say you contribute to the Roth IRA $100. Now, if it's a Roth 401k, 403b, it comes out of your paycheck. If it's a traditional, if it's a Roth IRA, it comes out of your checking account. What do the feds give you? What does the state of California give you? Yeah, right, nothing. But your disposable income is reduced by $100. Not as cool as the 401k, right? Or the traditional IRA. So why could you contribute to a Roth IRA? Here's the answer. Because you're going to do it, because Roth IRAs are really, really cool. And you're going to do it, and people are going to say, well, why do you contribute to the Roth IRA? And here's the answer. Because a Roth IRA is so cool. You know, we're brokers. We're not allowed to say everyone should have one. But you know what? Everyone should have one. Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. Now, there are some scenarios where it probably made sense for you to take the tax break now. Other people say don't, you know, always take a tax break now. But I'm a big fan of the Roth. Comparing apples to apples, all other things being equal and never are, the Roth always comes out ahead. You know, I think they're going to get rid of them because they're just too good to be true. Plus, here's another cool thing about Roth IRAs. You can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. You already paid taxes on the contributions. This makes the Roth IRA also an excellent intermediate-term investment account. Purchase of a house or other high-ticket item. Great for college expenses. Why? Because when you filled out the FAFSA form, not the FAFSA, but the FAFSA form, they didn't ask how much was in your Roth IRA. They didn't ask how much was in your parents' Roth IRA. Now, here's where the confusion sets in. People say, well, how much money can you make with a Roth IRA? Well, that's not the right question. What you should ask is how much money can you make with the investments that are inside your Roth IRA? Don't confuse the Roth IRA with the investment inside the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is simply that bucket that holds your investments. Cool? So if you go to a bank or a credit union, you know, they're going to put it in a savings account CD and give you 1%. You go to a mutual fund company or brokerage firm company, they're going to put it into stocks, especially if you're young. And unless the world ends, you'll get 8, 9, 7%, 10% more maybe. So don't confuse the IRA with the investment that's inside the IRA. But see if you can follow me on this, slide number 10. The Roth IRA is not for everyone. Yes, it is. You just have to learn how to navigate the paperwork. And if you don't follow me, don't worry about it. There are limitations on the Roth IRA contributions, unlike the traditional IRA. Traditional IRA doesn't have any limitations on the contributions. Only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $124,000 or less in 2020, it goes up with inflation every year. Married couples with an adjusted gross income of $196,000 or less can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. And if you don't qualify, congratulations. But you can contribute to the Roth IRA anyway. If you find that you've made over the limit, you recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA, which does not have the same limitations. Before you file your taxes, actually you can do it up to October of the next year. And then you convert the Roth traditional Roth IRA back to the Roth IRA. What did I say? You can convert the traditional IRA back to the Roth IRA. So let's see if we can follow this again. You contribute to the Roth IRA. You then recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA. And then you convert the traditional IRA back to the Roth. You do it on the same day. You submit all the paperwork at the exact same time. I've done it. I've helped clients do it. Who voted for these bozos? Oh yeah, we did. Is our tax law broken? Yes. Can we fix it? No, because nobody can agree on how to do it. But this is what we're stuck with. Now look at the contribution limits. Remember the taxable accounts. You could put as much money as you want into it. You have $1 million. Put $1 million in. But the Roth, the traditional IRA, it's only $6,000. If you're 50 or over, $7,000. If you're married, you can put another $6,000, for your spouse if they don't work. And then notice the limitations going up over time for the 401k, 403b. It's up to $19,500, which is a significant sum of money. And if you're 50 or over, that's $26,000. So let's say you're married. You're in your later 20s. You're a married couple. And you both make a pretty good salary. You could take one of your salaries and put $19,500 into a 401k. And the other, live off the other salary. If you do that for 5 years, when you're married and you're young, before you have kids or whatever, you don't ever have to put another dime away into your 401k. Now, you should, but still. And people have said, is that really true, Frank? I don't believe it. And so what did we do? We did a couple of illustrations that showed a married couple putting away, $19,000 per year for the next 5 years into their Roth 401k. I'm sorry, not Roth IRA, 401k. And then what happens 30 years later to that amount? Right. So think about it. Pretty cool. Okay. Now, there's a tax credit for low-income earners. Yes, there is. If you do your own taxes, don't forget this. You put $50 a month into a Roth IRA, that's $600 a year. You might get back $300, up to $300 from the feds. So definitely, and these are not, $65,000 is nothing to sneeze at for a married couple, $32,500 for a single filer. So make sure you remember this. We're not going to do it, but if you have TurboTax or other tax programs, or if you have somebody do your taxes, remind them that you put money into a Roth or a 401k. Oh, and we talked about the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. If your employer offers the option, they don't have to do it, you are able to place after-tax dollars into your 401k, 403b accounts, just like the Roth. The difference is employer matches are pre-tax contributions. So it gets a little funky because you have to remember how much was post-tax, after-tax, and how much was pre-tax, before-tax. Because when you take it out, you don't want the IRS taxing you twice. And contributions cannot be withdrawn without penalty or taxes, like the regular Roth IRA. This is a great option for those who don't need the tax break now. But I prefer the Roth IRA because you can more easily get to the money. But if your employer matches contributions, that's a no-brainer. Take it. Personally, what I've done over the years is I put the pre-tax dollars in my 403B at Southwestern and post-tax dollars in my wife and my Roth IRA. All right, now annuities. Some of you've heard me talk about annuities. I'm not a big fan of annuities. I'm an insurance agent, as well as a broker, stockbroker, right, registered representative. So I could sell these things, and the salespeople make tons of money, folks. The life insurance agents get a really nice commission. We're going to see that in just a moment. So I could sell these. I won't. I'll. If somebody wants one, I'll do my best to dissuade them. Now, there are a few situations where they might make sense, but here's the key. Here's the temptation of annuities. Annuity options include income for a set number of years, for as long as you live, the life income option, for as long as you live and your spouse or other dependent lives. You get a guaranteed income for life. Yippee! What do we know whenever we hear the word guaranteed? Right, you're going to pay for that. The amount you get is based on your age, which of the options you pick, how much you've contributed. And there are two basic types. There's the fixed annuity, and then there's the variable annuity. Folks, either of these are going to charge you outrageous sums of money. And the variable annuities, because they invest in mutual funds, are required to tell you what they're charging you. The fixed annuities don't bother. So be careful to look at the fees. They are at least 2 to 3 to 4 times more or more than what they charge you for regular mutual funds. Now, what are the advantages? They can be funded with retirement account dollars or after-tax dollars. So unlike the 401k, the traditional IRA, which have limits on their contributions, there's no limits on tax-deferred annuities. Your interest is tax-deferred, And when you take the money out, right, you pay taxes. So as with other retirement plans, when you retire, you will likely be in a lower tax income bracket. What's the downside? Very high fees, dear students. They usually take at least 1.5 to 3% every year on top of the mutual fund fees if it's in a variable annuity. But if you want to become a life insurance agent and sell these things and don't have any ethics, I'm sorry, and I've convinced yourself that they're really good for your clients, they're not, you can make a ton of money. I've got into serious arguments with other agents, and one guy was ready to punch me out. His buddies calmed him down, and I'm a coward. I ran away, and I just thought, oh my goodness, I feel so sorry for these clients. But that's what, you know, there's tons of examples of people just being raped by these salespeople. So let's review regular account. I'll show you the annuity examples in just a minute. Regular account, you pay taxes every year. The retirement accounts, there's the pre-tax, before tax, tax break now, pay taxes later. Post-tax, you pay taxes now, you tax-free in retirement. And then the annuities, which are a combination of both and have high fees. Okay, so, excuse me, that's that. Excuse me, let me stop the share. You might be hearing some banging or so. It's free money. Yeah, right. Yeah, you might be hearing some banging, and what you're hearing is actually the roofers. We need our roof replaced, and so they're up on the roof right now. There's Sam. How you doing, Sam? Okay, so let's now go back to the website, and see what's in it for the agent. Okay, here it is. Annuities suck, right? You know, that's a pretty strong word, but you can tell the insurance companies that I said that. Now, here's a link to an Investopedia that talks about annuities, but here are some links to articles from an annuity agent who has since, you know, decided he was going to tell the truth about these confessions of an index annuity salesperson. There's not a lot to trust about annuities. But this is what I got. Dear students, if you become an insurance agent, this is what you're going to get in the mail. This is what I got in the mail because it's public knowledge if you're an agent, and they're always looking for new people. America's number one rated income annuity, 20.75% bonus, 5% guaranteed, 9% commission. This is for the salesperson. 7-day Caribbean island cruise. This is not for the client. This is not the investor who's buying the annuity. If you sell enough of these things, they will send you on a 7-day, well, I guess they're not doing it these days, right? But they will send you on a Caribbean cruise, all expense paid. So that's what's in it for the annuity salesperson. So please check out these articles because they're actually pretty good. This guy, Stan Heathcock, used to be an insurance annuity salesperson, but now he's blown the whistle on the insurance. I'm sure he's not very popular with the annuity companies. Okay, cool. So that was retirement accounts, regular accounts, and annuities. Now, let us now take a look at real estate. Okay, where is it? It's right here. So let's go back to home. What's going on here? Okay, let's go back to the beginning. The home button. There we are. So now let's take a look at real estate. How are we doing for time? Not bad. You know, people will often ask me about real estate, and I say real estate is a bona fide investment, which is a fancy way of saying it really is something to invest in. The problem is it's difficult. I like to use the word tricky. It can be very, very profitable, but it's also a pain in the... Do you remember the PETA factor for mutual funds? The pain in the factor? With mutual funds, the PETA factor was really low. Once you've chosen the mutual fund, choosing the mutual fund is difficult, you know, once because there are thousands of them out there. But once you've chosen the mutual fund, there's nothing more for you to do. Just make sure the $100 goes into the, you know, leaves your checking account every month, or your payroll or whatever, payroll check. But real estate, it's the other way around. Real estate is a royal pain in the patootie. It's a lot of work, and don't let anybody tell you differently. That doesn't mean it's very profitable. It is. It can be very profitable. It can also be a disaster. So there are two major types of real estate investments. There are direct and indirect. Oh, by the way, I think I've told you this. Real estate is a world unto itself. It's really hard to teach in this one little presentation we're going to have, 30 minutes or whatever. We're only going to touch the surface. What I recommend for people is, if you really are interested in real estate, get a job at a property management company or an escrow company or a real estate, a real estate brokerage firm. Get in the industry and learn the ropes, because the problem is you got to come up with a ton of money at first if you want to buy a direct real estate investment. Slide number two. As the investor, putrid point. It's not working. Okay, oh well. Wait, isn't there a... Here it is. There's the pointer. Okay. As the investor, you hold title to the property. Your home if you buy your home, see, many of you are going to want to buy a home eventually, and you say, well, should I invest in real estate? Well, you already are. The fact that you're owning your home. But the cool thing about it is you get to live in it. You don't get to live in your mutual fund, right? Your vacation home, if you chose to have one. Rental property, as we said, is a whole course unto itself, but it's better learned as an employee at one of these companies. The most tremendous gains can be had from undeveloped land, but it also poses enormous risk. Don't buy dirt. Don't make it your first investment unless you've worked in the industry for many years and know exactly what you're doing. There's no cash flow. You still have to pay the property taxes. There's no guarantee that you'll be able to develop the land, but it can be incredibly profitable. Now, what about San Diego? Forget it. All the easily developable land has already been gobbled up. So it's you're up against some of the best real estate investors in the world when you invest in San Diego, or try to. And then the indirect real estate investments. This is what Andres was talking about, real estate investment trusts. Well, they look like stocks. For all express purposes, from our standpoint as an investor, they might as well be a stock. But they're not. They're trusts, and they're a little trickier in that respect. But when you go into a grocery store or a mall or some big apartment buildings, warehouses, office buildings, they're owned by real estate investment trusts. And so you can think of it like a mutual fund, but instead of investing in stocks or bonds, they invest in real estate. And they can be very profitable. Syndicates, limited partnerships, for the vast majority of us, stay away. They want you to come up with $25,000, $50,000 to start, and you might have trouble getting the money out. Might have trouble finding somebody to buy your partnership, part of the partnership. Tax credits for low-income housing. These are mostly for people who have really high income. Equity sharing. Now, we talk about this in Business 121 for people who are looking to buy their first home. You put the down payment up. You put the down payment down, and then the other couple or the individual lives in the house and pays the mortgage, and you share in the appreciation. This usually works with parents and grandparents and the younger adults just getting started. Whoa, there's a lot of banging going on. My apologies. That's the folks upstairs working on the roof. I should have thought of that. I should have moved my computer somewhere else. First and second trustees. You can actually invest in mortgages that are sometimes called hard money. Now that sounds scary, hard money. Doesn't that sound scary? It should be. You're investing in people who go to the bank, and the bank and the credit union says, go away, we don't want to touch you. So you get 8, 9, 10% on your money. Whoa, What do we know about high risk? Yeah, right. High return, high risk. Now, here's a company based here in San Diego that's actually done pretty darn well. She actually, one of the principals came and talked to our investment club, and I was impressed. I was really impressed. I haven't put any money with her and them, but I might someday, after I retire and the like, and don't have to worry about classes anymore, because you got to follow it. But they did pretty well. They did really well for a friend of mine who he asked me to come with him to the presentation, and I listened to the whole thing, and then I asked, okay, what's your default rate? And she looked at me, she goes, I don't know. we have about 200 loans, and about four of them are, well, two of them are in default, and two of them are kind of dangerous. Four, you have 2% out of, four out of 200, that's 2% default rate? Any bank, any credit union would love to have a 2% default rate. Well, they do their homework. She does not invest in anybody who she doesn't believe can actually pay the money back. And the property is a good property. So I was impressed. So who knows? There's a plug for her. Joanna. She's awesome. If you want her actual name and number, give it to me. But just look up her on the website there. Now, commercial property. Ha! San Diego commercial property is just unbelievable. You think housing is expensive? You know, in 1999, that was what, 20 years ago? A little over 20 years ago, you could have bought a downtown San Diego, right downtown, storefront property for about $1 million. Now they go for 8, 9, 10 million. Throw a number up in the air. The rule of thumb is if you can get something for 7 to 10 times rent, so that means, say you bought a condo for $400,000 here in San Diego. $400,000, gets you a condo. That means you got to get at least almost $4,000 a month, $3,000 a month in rent, 7 to 10 times rent. Yeah, right. So prices are getting back to 2007 for some properties. Some have gotten past the 2009 and 10 bubble. And I think the bargains are in the South Bay. If you're going to invest in real estate, South Bay, East County, but it's just really, really expensive, dear students. Fixer-uppers. Again, this is tough because you're up against the best in the world when you deal with San Diego. But concentrate on smaller properties first. A duplex. Live in one, rent out the other. And the cool thing is that you know what's going on at 2 a.m. in the morning. You can hear them if they're partying. Look for low down payments, seller financing of rundown properties, because banks usually do not want a loan to distressed properties, but they are normally all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books. In other words, these people are in trouble. The bank doesn't want to foreclose, or maybe they've already foreclosed. They will usually help you take it off their hands. I think you should avoid property managers because no one cares about your property as much as you do. Obviously, there are some very reputable property managers out there, but I think you, before you get into investing in real estate, should become a property manager, work for a property manager, know how to fix a toilet, know how to fix a tenant, learn the ropes, learn the legal things that you have to do, when you need to talk to the lawyer, when you're going to have to go through the courts. Oh my goodness, that's such a horrible situation. Yeah, one tenant can make your life miserable, dear students. And if you don't believe me, just go online and look up landlord nightmares, and you'll see all kinds of people. What I always thought I had the best, but this one was better. This one was even better. One of my students, a few years back, was from Texas. She was in the military. Her parents bought a house, and then they moved into another house. They bought another house and they rented out the first one. They figured, we're going to be landlords. They had two tenants. They were roommates. The one roommate killed the other roommate and then set fire to the house to try to hide the murder. Right, yeah. As soon as you set fire to a house, the firemen come. The house doesn't gets up to about 1,000 degrees, but in to incinerate a body, you need 1,800 degrees. So they put out the fire, and there's this dead body in there. Yeah, right. So, yeah. You see? Real estate can be a... I'm not trying to dissuade you, but that doesn't happen in a mutual fund. We discussed this. Most importantly, are you savvy dealing with repairs? Are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. Make improvements that add perceived value. I don't know why, but people love a white picket fence. I am horrible. I have the worst fingers in the world when it comes to fixing things. That's why we know a lot of people who are very good at fixing things. But this guy is great to read. Just read his books just for fun, because and of course, if you are handy with your hands, he'll teach you how to do the stuff you need to do. So check it out. He's got other books, but this is the one I read. Okay, now let's get to real estate investment trusts. These real estate investment trusts are similar to mutual funds. They are pass-through investments. Remember pass-through investments? By law, they must distribute 95% of their earnings to the shareholders, where mutual funds have to distribute 100%. Real estate investment trusts only have to distribute 95%. So shopping centers, office buildings, warehouses, management fees typically range between 1 and 2% per year. You know, 1% is typical, like a mutual fund. The long-term return, what have they done? About 7, 8%. And typically they pay pretty darn good dividends. Now, they don't pay dividends. They pay what are called fees from operations. But it looks like dividends, so what do we care, right? They're taxed differently. So let's go take a look at one of the REITs that's actually based here in San Diego called Realty. And they have the dubious distinction of having the letter O as their, I don't know why they chose O, because that confused that with a zero, but that's the, come on, sweetheart, come on, honey. Well, when am I going to stop using, here it is, Realty Income Corporation. Stop using Yahoo. Didn't I click on it? I did. Here it comes. So here's Realty Income Corporation. They're on the New York Stock Exchange, right? They are currently selling for $51. How's the market doing? And pretty quiet. 5%. Just a few months ago, they were paying under, I don't know, 3% or so. So typically, personally, I like REITs when they're paying 7, 8%. You know, that's what I like it. Look at the PE ratio. Not that great. 35. Market cap, it's a mid-cap company. And what do they do? Let's take a look at their profile. It'll tell you that they own real estate because they're a real estate investment trust. Here, see, based up in North County. Where's the description? Providing dependable monthly income, over 6,500 real estate properties under long-term lease agreements. Yeah, if you're Vons or Home Depot, you don't actually own that building. You enter into a 50-year lease to own that building, so you're basically you're the Mahatma, you're the in charge. But they, the real estate investment trust, they're the ones who actually own the building. They keep it up, they collect the rent, and then pass it on to their shareholders. Another one that's well run is Kimco. Kimco, let's see what that's the. Let's take a look at the summary. What are they paying? They usually pay a pretty good dividend. Yeah, they're paying 10%. Uh-oh. I think what they did is they just cut their dividend. And they're a lot smaller, like $4 billion. But they're a well-run 12. It's much smaller. But real estate's going to, because what? All the malls and stuff. And then the other one is Simon Group. Simon SPG, is it? SPG? Yeah, Simon Property Group. Another good REIT. The problem with REITs is just not that many of them. Here's another one. It's about $17 billion, paying 15%. Don't you believe it? They're going to cut their dividend. They're not paying 15%. Maybe they're paying 15% right now, but next quarter they're probably going to cut their dividends. So REITs are actually, we should take a look at REITs and see how much Simon Property Group and Realty Group. So I would think the ones who are invested in malls are probably going to have the hardest times. But the apartment, yeah, the apartments are going to have a hard time too. But the office buildings, probably not too bad. Warehouses, I don't know. I'm just not that savvy when it comes to them. We owned a REIT a long time ago that was based here in San Diego, and it actually did very well, and then it got purchased. So REITs are one way to get into real estate without being a landlord. Now, what are the advantages? Real estate has typically been a good hedge against inflation. You get that financial leverage we talked about when we talked about buying on margin. And for real estate investment trusts and partnerships, easy entry. REITs are easily liquidated. Partnerships, not always. No management concerns with REITs or real estate partnerships. And you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet, which is one of the major problems with stocks. You know, people say, I'm in it for the long term, and then every 5 minutes they're running at their phone and looking at what happened to the stock. Whereas real estate, you can use Zillow, but I don't trust Zillow or Trulia. I mean, they give a kind of a good idea, but not a very good idea. Now, what are the disadvantages? Liquidity. Stocks, mutual funds, very liquid. Real estate, no. Real estate is not a liquid investment. It may be hard to sell your property depending on what's going on in the marketplace or your share in the partnership. That's not a problem with REITs. They sell us like a stock. So it's difficult to get diversification. Of course, a REIT, a partnership that gives you diversification. And the management, tenant problems, the PETA factor, and property values can decline, dear students. Oh, yes, they can. We'll take a look at a worksheet in just a few moments to show you what can happen on the upside and what can happen on the downside. Your home will be a major investment, dear students. That's why many people say, well, I'd rather invest in real estate. I say, well, you're going to buy a house? I hope to. I'm going to buy a condo or a home somewhere. You're going to be invested in real estate because you're going to have your home. Traditionally, a home produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5% a year, which is, you know, not too bad. That's about the same as bonds. But San Diego, no, it's been much higher than that. Plus, the home has a tremendous tax advantage. If you lived in your home for at least 2 years, you could have rented it out of the last 3 out of the 5 years. But as long as you've lived in it in 2 of the last 5 years, you can sell your house if you're single and make a $250,000 tax, capital gains tax free. Oops. Capital gains tax free. For a single person, $500,000 capital gains tax free for married folks, which is pretty darn cool. And some people are doing this. Some people, not so much San Diego, it's kind of tough, but other parts of the country, they find a fixer-upper, they move in there, they live there for 2 years, fix it up. They usually have a day job also, they have another job. And then after a couple years, 2 years, they can sell it, pay no capital gains, find another fixer-upper. Of course, that's for people who are handy. Because if you have to pay for all that to be done, it might work out, but usually it's better to do it yourself. It's called sweat equity. But in my humble opinion, it's a home first and investment second. This is what you're going to hear from people, especially if they've been in their house for a while. But my house is the best investment I've ever made. I'm not, you know, they'll tell you when they find out that you like stocks or whatever. If you scratch the surface, ask me a few more questions, this is what you'll get. Of course, it's pretty much the only investment that I've ever made. Except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying, but that stuff is worthless now. And those gold coins I bought way back when the first Gulf War started, back in 1991. What did I do with those things anyway? In my humble opinion, a house is a home first and investment second. But you're going to hear other people say, oh, no, no, no. You're usually real estate agents, dear students. You're going to buy this house in this area, and then in 4 or 5 years, you're going to sell it because it's going to appreciate, and you're going to, of course, give me another commission. Then you're going to go to this other area and buy another house, and then you're going to, it's a home first, an investment second. But what about San Diego, huh? Prices in San Diego have gone down in the past. They seem to be poised for another downturn. We'll see what happens. I don't know how bad it's going to be, but we're probably in the recession right now. Of course, the problem is you can't know because you have to wait 6 months. But if you plan on staying here, by all means, buy whatever you can afford. I think San Ysidro and National City are two of the best values in the region. And people say, hey, National City, you would live in National City. I say, oh, it's really dangerous. They got cars and houses and kids and shopping centers. It's very dangerous. Don't go there. Imperial Beach is also a great beach value. But I worry about tsunamis in Imperial Beach. Don't expect what happened in the 2000s to repeat itself for quite some time. But, you know, some areas have done well, some not so well. I think, Chula Vista is expensive. But if you just go to National City or San Ysidro, you find pretty darn good deals. If you go out to Lemon Grove or Spring Valley, it's a better deal. That's a little farther out, but still, they're there. Once you get above Interstate 8, forget it. It's insane. I mean, who's paying these prices? I don't know, but somebody is. This is what I saw in 1993. I'd never forget this. I just laughed. I took a picture. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. Do you think she did? Probably, right? She probably did it all the same that she did. Because in the 1980s, there was a big boom. And then the bust occurred in 1990, 91, 92. And then it, took us a long time for it to get back. And then in 2001, real estate took off again after the internet bubble burst. They have to find another bubble. And then we don't know. Come on, Payano, slide 14. Admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. This is what people were telling you in the mid-2000s. But as we've said from Andrew Tobias, beware the permanent trend. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. People who bought in 1990 and sold in 94, they lost money. People who bought that flipper condo in 2006 lost everything when they went through foreclosure. But if you plan to hold for the long term, real estate should do well, just as stock should do well. By the way, there is no such thing as a perfect investment, right? We now, after taking this class, understand that all investments have advantages, all investments have disadvantages. We want to have our eyes wide open and not just look at the disadvantages and not just look at the advantages. We want to balance our decisions. Cool. But what about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money, huh? We discussed leverage, haven't we? But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes, but there are pitfalls. Just as with margining stocks, leveraging real estate magnifies your gain and magnifies your losses. So if we go to the website, and we do this in 121, here is a worksheet with a commentary and the answer key. So let's just take a look at the answer key real fast. And here's the worksheet. Now these are from one of the older editions of the Business 121 book. This version of the book was written in 2004, 2005, when the real estate mania was raging. Real estate was going up 20% a year. 20% a year? How long is that going to last? Well, it lasted until about 2007. So here, Dave, he bought a rental property for $200,000 cash. And then 1 year later, he sold it for $240,000. And this is what was going on. So what was that? If he put down $200,000 and made $40,000 absolute dollar return, he made a 20% return on his investment. It cost us $200,000 to make $40,000. But that's not what they were asking you to put down. You could put down, say, 10%. You put down $20,000 on a $200,000 condo. And next year, before or as the thing became, because you bought it when it was still being built, you had no intentions of ever living in the damn thing. You bought it while it was still being built. You put $20,000 down. And then when it was actually ready to be sold, it was selling for $40,000 more. And so you made $40,000 on a $20,000 investment. That's a 200% return. You see the power of financial leverage? It only cost us $20,000 to make $40,000. And this is what was going on 15 years ago. Quick, run down, buy that flipper condo. Quick, they're giving away free money. All you got to do is just put up 20 grand and 9 months later, a year later, you get, you know, 60,000 bucks back. Hey, what a deal. Until it wasn't. Let's say this one wasn't. They called it number 666. This actually was problems number one and two in that book. Calculating the return on investment using financial leverage and things don't go as planned. He bought it for $200,000, put $20,000 down, right? But it dropped 20%, which is what happened. And then they dropped another 20%. And some dropped 50 or more percent. You had to go back to the Great Depression to see real estate fall that far. So now his condo is only worth $160,000, but he still owes $180,000. And the question is now, what's he going to tell his wife? Honey, we have a bit of a problem. He lost all $20,000, plus he still owes $20,000 more than what he can sell it for, which is why so many people went through foreclosure. They just walked away from the real estate because now they couldn't make the payments or whatever. Now, if he held on, it's now selling for more than $200,000. He caught, you know, depending how far down it went. But that's what leverage can do to you. It can destroy you, dear students. Now, these questions will not be on the exam, so we're not going to ask you these questions. But make sure you understand that. Because when people say leverage is cool, they're right. Leverage is cool, and it's also not so cool when it magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. Okay, so now, wait a minute, Piano. Did you say that there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Currently, as the law stands now, as long as your real estate is your primary residence for two out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. If you lose money on your primary residence, it is not tax deductible. Why? Because it's your home first, it's an investment second. So you bought your home for $200,000. If you're married, you could sell for $700,000 and pay no capital gains taxes. Pretty darn amazing. Now, this is what Andres was talking about before class started. You're going to see ads from people who are just going to start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed surefire real estate investment kit for only $395. You'll be on your way toward riches beyond your wildest dreams. And then come to our 5-day seminar, which teaches you where to find properties for pennies on the dollar. It's only $9,995. It's guaranteed. And when that doesn't work, we'll send you to Hawaii for $25,000. You think I'm lying. You think I'm over-exaggerating. I am not. Here is a scam artist. I'm sorry, a reality show star who wants you to teach you how to flip real estate for only $34,000. I'm sitting in a hotel ballroom listening to a pitch I can scarcely believe. Earn $70,000 or $80,000 a year in your spare time. So, dear students, they are out there. Get rid of this guy, I guess as a ad. But anyway, here, they're out there, folks. Stay away. Anybody who tells you if it's too good to be true, right. So what's the advice on real estate? Make it your home. After you've digested that purchase, look for some rental property, but learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it. Maybe even work for a property manager for a spell to get the feel for what you will need to be able to do, because the PETA factor is real. And that, dear students, is our discussion of real estate. Oops, and it's not going away, so I'm just going to click on this guy over here. Okay, back to here. There it is. There's finally he's talking about why this reality star wants to sell you. Teach you how to flip homes for only $34,000. All right, so now let's take a look at gold. Precious metals, art, and collectibles. Everybody stretch, stretch. My wife, I wish my wife would tell these people to, they're banging away. You can hear them. I can hear them. You probably can't hear them as much as I can. All right, now, precious gems, gold. Folks, you know, diamonds are not an investor's best friend. There are a few in the world that may make you money, but for the most part, there's plenty of them out there, folks. In fact, they now make diamonds. You can take your cat or your dog or your Uncle Lucas or whatever and incinerate them after they've met their great reward, send them off to a company, and they'll send you back a diamond. Because diamonds are made out of carbon, we're made out of carbon, so they can turn you or peanut butter or whatever into a diamond. So they are not a... Come on, why isn't it... Is it supposed to... Yeah, I'm sorry, here we are. I was wondering what's going on. Precious metals, art, and collectibles. So I'm starting. Let's start on slide number one. My apologies. I'm having trouble with this. Well, here we go, finally. Gold. Gold. Now, in the beginning of the semester, did you say to yourself, oh, I can't wait to learn how to invest in gold? Folks, gold is not the best investment out there. In fact, as we saw back in chapter one, it's really not a very good investment at all. As we're going to see when we review a slide in just a few moments. But one of the biggest problems with gold is, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to store it? In your house? You're going to bury it in the backyard? You're going to put it in a safety deposit box? Well, you might think that the safety deposit box, everything in there is yours, yes. But if there is economic collapse, you're not going to be able to get into your safety deposit box. There's going to be an armed guard in front of that bank. And there, yeah, because at times the government will, has in the past, confiscate gold and give you dollars for your gold. Which, the reason you bought the gold is because you were afraid that the dollars are going to be worthless. This is what you'll hear people say, I'm owning gold because the whole, those fiat currencies are all going to become worthless someday. It's going to happen. Yeah, sure. The world could fall apart. But if you believe the world economy is going to fall apart anytime soon, go ahead, put your money in gold. But as we said, what happens if the world economy does fall apart? You better be out of the Northern Hemisphere. You better be down somewhere in Terra del Fuego or Tasmania and learn how to raise goats, because it ain't going to do you any good to have gold. If there's no food at the Vons, no gas at the Chevron station, no clothes at the Gap, the cell phones aren't working, the hospitals, the schools, the banks are all shuttered, the trash isn't being picked up, the sewers are... Don't go there. Failure is not an option. And I don't think it's going to fail. I think the next 20... I've told you this in the past. I think the next 20, 30 years are going to be the most prosperous years in the history of the world. The last 20, 30 years have been the most prosperous history. In the history of the world, more people have come out of poverty than ever before. The biggest percentage of people in the world are now the global middle class, which is cool, very, very cool. I like Tom Petrino. He retired several years ago, but sometimes he'll write something for the LA Times, and if he ever does, read it. If your reason for owning gold has something to do with the end of the world as we know it, shotguns and canned food probably would be more practical investments. But they're not, because there's millions of people who are going to be scrounging for food. How much ammo do you have? How much food do you have? No, it doesn't work that way. We're in this together. So, now, what about silver? Silver, by the way, what is gold useful for? Nothing, really. It's great in your teeth. The dentist will tell you it's still the best stuff, but they have other stuff than that. There's a little tiny bit of gold in all your cell phones and other computer stuff, but just tiny. Now, silver does actually have pretty good industrial usage. But the biggest uses of silver is gone. The biggest use of silver for decades was film, but nobody uses that anymore. Now, what about these three? Platinum, palladium, and rhodium. These actually have some future. They're already used in... catalytic converters, which everybody needs a catalytic converter on their car, unless we go like all electric. And they are used quite a bit in what are called fuel cells. So they might have a pretty cool future. But for the most part, stay away from these. And do you remember this slide from way back in chapter one? When we talked about how well gold has done compared to stocks, bonds, short-term investments, and the consumer price index? Yeah, gold has kept up with inflation, but just barely. But what have stocks done? Right, stocks are where it's at, dear students. Growth of the economy, yes, in my humble opinion. Now, notice when gold does well is when the world is about to end, in the 1860s, 1930s, 2000s. So stay away from gold. And now, finally, we're on slide four. Precious stones, and diamonds are not an investor's best friend. As we said, they make diamonds. You make a diamond out of your Teo Lucas or your Fluffy or Spot, your dog. And now collectibles. Now, here's something that may interest some of you. May not. Coins, art, antiques, stamps, Chinese ceramics, paintings, Beanie Babies, baseball cards, cars. Look, it can be a good investment and a great hobby, but it can also be a financial disaster. There's the El Cajon Barbie guy who claimed he had $50,000 worth of antique Barbie dolls in a storage lockup, a storage bin, one of these storage locations, and one weekend they all disappeared. Is the storage location gonna insure you? No, insurance says, if somebody steals some of your stuff, it's not our problem. So be careful of investment scams. We have some friends who bought in the 1980s what they thought was a Dali, Salvador Dali. And then they learned later on that there was a spate of counterfeit Dalis flooded the world. And they did not even want to bother looking and checking. Now, I love art. I'd love to look at it, but I don't really want to buy it as an investment. I almost did. I almost bought a John Lennon print a long time ago. I thought it would do really well. It didn't. His art has not done very well. What I should have bought was one of his guitars. His guitars are selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you don't know. That's the problem. You just don't know. But if it brings you joy, then great. You actually might do really well. And look at this. This is the guy who runs Christie's Auction. He says it best. Don't buy art as an investment. Buy it because it brings you joy, because it makes you happy or makes you think or whatever. I bought one thing a long time ago, and last time I checked, I bought it for $20. I don't want to tell you how long ago. It really long ago. The last time I checked, it was selling for $500. At least that's what they said it was selling for. I don't know. That's probably what they will sell you. They probably will buy it back for $200. But still, $15 to $30. But it cost me $20, but it cost me like $30 to put it in a frame. So don't buy art as an investment. Now, the maximum capital gains tax rate on most all investments is currently 15% and could be as low as 5% depending on your income. But the cap, it's 20% for people making over $600,000, so I don't feel sorry for them. The capital gains tax rate on precious metals is currently 28%, and none of these investments are eligible for tax-qualified accounts, retirement accounts, educational savings accounts. Do you think the Congress is trying to tell you something? If you find one of these that interests you, like cars, I have a friend who invests in cars, and he loves it, but he can fix them. That's the problem. And he drives a lot better than I do. I bump and grind. I'm not going to want to own a car that's worth a lot of money because I don't treat them well. So maybe you'll get invested in cars. Maybe you'll get invested in baseball cards or whatever. But consider it a fun hobby first, and you might make some money too. And so that, dear students, was our discussion of precious metals, art, and collectibles. Okay, whoo! Wow, got a few more minutes. Let's take a look at cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is very... What happened to cryptocurrency? Cryptocurrency is very similar to gold. In fact, it's gold for nerds. You know Stephen Colbert? This guy's actually pretty darn sharp, in my humble opinion. Here's, see, because I don't really understand it much other than it's pure speculation. So when the cryptocurrency fad exploded a couple years ago, I figured, well, okay, you know, I got to somehow tell my students what I think about it. Not that I really understand it that well. I mean, it's pure speculation. Here's Milton Friedman, who passed away just as the internet was getting started, but he was a very, very sharp guy. And he said, look, I think the internet's going to be one of the major forces for reducing the role of government. The one thing that's missing, but that will soon be developed, is a reliable e-cash. However, you look at Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies, this is not a reliable e-cash. Alan Greenspan, who was the Federal Reserve Chairman for many years, you have to really stretch your imagination to infer what the intrinsic value of Bitcoin is. I haven't been able to do it. Maybe someone else can. Remember all the fundamental analysis techniques that we looked at? None of them will give any kind of reliable amount of intrinsic value to the Bitcoin. Why? Because it's not worth anything. There's no economy backing it up. There's no dividends, no cash flows of interest, no. You just buy high and sell higher. You hope. Which is pretty much what we know about gold, right? That's what gold is. It doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't pay interest. It doesn't have capital gains or rent or anything. You just hope that you can sell it for more than what you buy it. So Stephen Colbert was very, very sharp. He called it gold for nerds. Bitcoin and other currencies are pure speculation. You must buy low, sell high. Very similar to gold and precious metals, but even worse because there are no practical applications. I mean, at least gold is useful for jewelry, right? Other than creating a great system for crooks to steal your money with ransomware on your computer. However, the technology behind cryptocurrencies, blockchain, is valuable and I think will survive. And eventually, governments which have economies to put up for behind their currencies will be able to build reliable e-currencies. Did someone have a question? Okay. Oh, come on, Piano. What you got against Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies? You're just old, that's all. This is the future. We're all going to get rich. Yeah, right. When have you heard that before? Rebuttal. First of all, as mentioned, you can't invest in a cryptocurrency. You can only speculate. The value is only worth what others believe it is worth. They do not pay interest, dividend, rents. In other words, there's no cash flow. More importantly, there's nothing backing the currency. And this is when you get people say, but what about the fiat currencies, huh? Aren't they all the same? They are only worth something because we believe they are. That's what you hear people say. The dollar is only worth something because we believe it's worth something. No. Not so fast. That's not true. You will hear people say that our dollars and other fiat currencies, pesos, yens, euros, whatever, rubles, are not backed by gold and are therefore worthless. Poppycock! By the way, what is gold worth, right? Well, as we saw, gold also as an investment is a speculation. Our dollars are backed by our economy, the great American economic machine. Our dollars are backed by what the United States can produce and consume, our gross domestic product. Walk into any grocery store and look around, and then you tell me that our dollars are worthless. It just, because we're inside this system, we just don't see it. We just don't see it because we're so inculcated. You like that word, inculcated? It means we're enmeshed in it. Somebody from another economy, which is, you know, not as anywhere near as powerful as ours, will come to our country and walk into a Vons or a grocery store, a Kroger's or whatever, and just their mouths will fall open. Right? So yeah, the dollar is not worthless. The job of the Federal Reserve Bank is to make sure that there are enough dollars in circulation to match the production of our economy with the consumption of our economy. If you have too many dollars, you get inflation. Too many dollars chasing too few goods. Too few dollars and our economic output is stifled and opportunities for growth of our wealth are lost. Look, it's not an easy job. I love it when I hear people scream, "End the Fed!" Oh yeah? As if you could do a better job? I'd like to see you do a better job. The people at the Fed, you know, if you hear people say deep state, they're part of the... How do you argue with these people? They're nuts. But they got guns and they're going... Check out Boogaloo. They want to do an armed insurrection if Trump doesn't win. And they're pissed off at Trump for not doing more. They want to be him more like a Nazi. So, how does this relate to cryptocurrency and how do you explain the success of Bitcoin? Well, there is absolutely nothing to stop other individuals or groups from starting their own cryptocurrencies, right? There were over 2,000 cryptocurrencies 2 years ago. Maybe there's fewer now. But my favorite is Jesus Coin. And if you don't believe me, look it up. I think they've changed it now, but it was Jesus Coin. It was the only one blessed by God. You wonder if it's a joke or not. It's tulip bulb mania all over again. Eventually, the bottom will fall out, which it did. It went up to 20,000 or almost 20,000, then down to 3. Now it's back up to 6 or whatever, it's 7. Some people got very rich and others lost a whole lot of money. So, however, as Stephen Colbert so astutely observed, it's gold for nerds. Most likely, a few of the larger currencies will survive and start to behave like gold, which is, as we saw, is barely kept up with inflation. Until then, you know, be prepared for serious volatility. So, a few of them, as I said, are going to survive, and they'll be, you know, the people who invest in gold, the younger folks who would have invested in gold, they'll invest in cryptocurrencies and remind you of this wonderful graphic that shows you that gold is a horrible investment over decades. Cool. Okay, and that's the cryptocurrency. So now we have one last one, which we're not going to do today. We're going to save it for Thursday because it's the ultimate investment, and that is starting a business. But again, dear students, I am so proud. I am so honored to have you in class. Let's stop the share, and let's see who we got here. Anybody else new? Janet, I got Janet, 2 of 2. I think I got, Melissa. Okay, Melissa's here. Ethan, no. Oh, Isaac is here. I think Nancy Hernandez is here. Alejandro, Alan, Viri, Daphne, Luis Marchan is here. Okay. So, now, any last questions, any thoughts, any ideas, any questions? Okay, just thought you wanted to know that it is the correct is bullion. I spelled bullion wrong? Okay, thank you, Tiffany. I got to fix that. Bullion.
I just got one question now that we were talking about collectibles.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Do you have any idea what the newest Beanie Baby is going to be?
Are they really going to come out with a new Beanie Baby?
No, like that same craze.
Oh, I don't know. I am culturally challenged, Alejandro, really. I don't know who Tiger, whatever the guy is, Tiger, I don't know. We don't have a television. Alejandro, we do not have a television. I don't want one in my house. When I first met the woman who became my wife, she didn't have a television. I said, that's a really good sign. This woman's for me. I don't watch the news. I don't watch. My wife likes to watch murder mysteries, and like we go to the library and pick them up. She likes the Murdoch mysteries, which are from Toronto of all places, and other. She's a Outlander fan, and she watches every once in a while. I watch, but I'm not part of the culture. I'm definitely not part of the culture. So I don't know. What do you think? Probably something to do with, no, there's too many masks in the world. Something current. You know, Alejandro, I really don't. Anybody else? Anybody else what the next Beanie Baby will be? I'm old enough to remember Pet Rocks. And some of you don't believe me, but there was a fad where this guy or gal, whoever it was, decided to sell pet rocks. So you bought this little rock in a box, and it came with a little they gave it a name, and it came with a little booklet that told you how to care for your pet rock, and people bought it. People bought it. It's unbelievable that people bought this damn thing. I remember I was lucky enough to have a professor in my master's degree who was the guy. He was a marketing professor, but he was the guy who started. He used to work. He had the national account for Cracker Jack. He was pretty old, and when I met him, and I was pretty young, so it was a long time ago. And this was the late 1960s. And then about 1970 or so, he decided to come up with a phony or knockoff on Cracker Jack called Screaming Yellow Zonkers and Fiddle Faddle. It's the fear of missing out on some of these trends is what Nancy says. And she's right, yeah. Fiddle Faddle and Screaming Yellow Zonkers. And he said, we were so amazed. We figured 6 months, maybe a year at the most, and it would disappear from the culture. People kept buying it. They wanted more of it. We had to go back to the manufacturer and ask for more them to make more. So I think you can still buy Screaming Yellow Zonkers and Fiddle Faddle, even though they never thought it was going to be more than 6 month phenomenon. Pops.
Yeah, they still see Fiddle Faddle on like the store shelves as they walk by. People still buy it.
Yeah, I know. See, that was it. And they never thought, they literally never thought it was going to be more than a year that they would sell this crap. I mean, because that's what it is. It's, you know, it's corn, obviously, but it's lots of sugar and salt and other crap. Funko Pops. Now, Alan Garcia, tell me what Funko Pops are. I got to look up this. But are they edible? Are they...
Well, they're actually, I agree. Funko Pops. They're little dolls with like oversized heads.
Oh, okay. So they're like.
They'll make them out of anything. So basically, like anything that's a fad, say like the Marvel Universe, Star Wars, especially. They just like little figurines that are like kind of look like anime, and they don't do nothing. They're just in a box, and people collect them. They sell them at every GameStop. I have friends who go ahead and pay $60 for a little figurine.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
I have one who has a whole wall filled with it. That's why I'm mentioning it, because he spent a lot of money on it.
And what are they worth? Are they worth anything?
Well, they're supposed to be worth about $20 when they first come out, and then people will buy them for more and trade them after that.
But... In 2 years, they're not going to be worth anything.
Pretty much.
Sure, they've been going around for some time.
Yeah, well.
Doesn't have any real value.
What amazes me are people spending a ton of money on sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Anyway, so we're over time now. I'll stick around. Those of you who have questions, please stick around. I actually have one in Box Comic-Con. Look, I've seen it go for $800.
Yep.
Sell it now, Nancy. Sell it now. Sell it. Anybody's going to pay $800 for a stupid... I don't know. I will at some point. Yeah, she's going to sell it at some point. Okay, so now Tiffany had a question. I remember. Tiffany, what's the question? So we'll stop recording now. All right, so we're going to stop recording. Where's the record button? Stop recording.